Chapter 93. Circumstances of the case. Those facts and circumstances, gentlemen, you shall hear detailed by me, and proved by the unimpeachable female whom I will place in that box before you. Apostrophe here, Mr. Sergeant Buzfuzz, with a tremendous emphasis on the word box, apostrophe smote his table with a mighty sound, and glanced at Dodson and Fogg, who nodded admiration of the sergeant, and indignant defiance of the defendant. The plaintiff, gentlemen, apostrophe continued Sergeant Buzfuzz, in a soft and melancholy voice, the plaintiff is a widow, yes, gentlemen, a widow. The late Mr. Bartle, after enjoying, for many years, the esteem and confidence of his sovereign, as one of the guardians of his royal revenues, glided almost imperceptibly from the world, to seek elsewhere for that repose and peace which a custom house can never afford. Apostrophe at this pathetic description of the decease of Mr. Bartle, who had been knocked on the head with a quart pot in a public house cellar, the learned sergeant's voice faltered, and he proceeded, with emotion, some time before his death, he had stamped his likeness upon the little boy. With this little boy, the only pledge of her departed exciseman, Mrs. Bartle shrank from the world, and courted the retirement and tranquility of Goswell Street. And here she placed in her front parlor window a written placard, bearing this inscription, Apartments furnished for a single gentleman. Inquire within. Apostrophe here Sergeant Buzfuzz paused, while several gentlemen of the jury took a note of the document. There is no date to that, is there? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired a juror. There is no date, gentlemen, apostrophe replied Sergeant Buzfuzz. But I am instructed to say that it was put in the plaintiff's parlor window just this time 3 years. I entreat the attention of the jury to the wording of this document, apartments furnished for a single gentleman. Mrs. Bartle's opinions of the opposite sex, gentlemen, were derived from a long contemplation of the inestimable qualities of her lost husband. She had no fear, she had no distrust, she had no suspicion. All was confidence and reliance. Mr. Bartle, said the widow, Mr. Bartle was a man of honor, Mr. Bartle was a man of his word, Mr. Bartle was no deceiver, Mr. Bartle was once a single gentleman himself. To single gentlemen I look for protection, for assistance, for comfort, and for consolation. In single gentlemen I shall perpetually see something to remind me of what Mr. Bartle was when he first won my young and untried affections. To a single gentleman, then, shall my lodgings be let. Actuated by this beautiful and touching impulse among the best impulses of our imperfect nature, gentlemen, the lonely and desolate widow dried her tears, furnished her first floor, caught her innocent boy to her maternal bosom, and put the bill up in her parlor window. Did it remain there long? No. The serpent was on the watch, the train was laid, the mine was preparing, the sapper and miner was at work. Before the bill had been in the parlor window 3 days, 3 days, gentlemen, a being, erect upon two legs, and bearing all the outward semblance of a man, and not of a monster, knocked at the door of Mrs. Bartle's house. He inquired within, he took the lodgings, and on the very next day he entered into possession of them. This man was Pickwick Pickwick, the defendant. Apostrophe, Sergeant Buzfuzz, who had proceeded with such volubility that his face was perfectly crimson, here paused for breath. The silence awoke Mr. Justice Starley, who immediately wrote down something with a pen without any ink in it, and looked unusually profound, to impress the jury with the belief that he always thought most deeply with his eyes shut. Sergeant Buzfuzz proceeded, of this man Pickwick I will say little. The subject presents but few attractions, and I, gentlemen, am not the man, nor are you, gentlemen, the men, to delight in the contemplation of revolting heartlessness, and of systematic villainy. apostrophe, here Mr. Pickwick, who had been writing in silence for some time, gave a violent start, as if some vague idea of assaulting Sergeant Buzfuz, in the august presence of justice and law, suggested itself to his mind. An admonitory gesture from Perker restrained him, and he listened to the learned gentleman's continuation with a look of indignation, which contrasted forcibly with the admiring faces of Mrs. Clubpins and Mrs. Sanders. "I say systematic villainy, gentlemen," apostrophe said Sergeant Buzfuz, looking through Mr. Pickwick, and talking at him. "And when I say systematic villainy, let me tell the defendant, Pickwick, if he be in court, as I am informed he is, that it would have been more decent in him, more becoming, in better judgment, and in better taste, if he had stopped away. Let me tell him, gentlemen, that any gestures of dissent or disapprobation in which he may indulge in this court will not go down with you, that you will know how to value, and how to appreciate them. And let me tell him further, as my lord will tell you, gentlemen, that a counsel, in the discharge of his duty to his client, is neither to be intimidated nor bullied, nor put down, and that any attempt to do either the one or the other, or the first, or the last, will recoil on the head of the attempter, be he plaintiff, or be he defendant, be his name Pickwick, or Noakes, or Stokes, or Stiles, or Brown, or Thompson. Apostrophe, this little divergence from the subject in hand, had, of course, the intended effect of turning all eyes to Mr. Pickwick. Sergeant Buzfuz, having partially recovered from the state of moral elevation into which he had lashed himself, resumed, "I shall show you, gentlemen, that for 2 years, Pickwick continued to reside constantly, and without interruption or intermission, at Mrs. Bartle's house. I shall show you that Mrs. Bartle, during the whole of that time, waited on him, attended to his comforts, cooked his meals, looked out his linen for the washerwoman, when it went abroad, darned, aired, and prepared it for wear, when it came home, and, in short, enjoyed his fullest trust and confidence. I shall show you that, on many occasions, he gave halfpence, and on some occasions even sixpences, to her little boy. And I shall prove to you, by a witness whose testimony it will be impossible for my learned friend to weaken or controvert, that on one occasion he patted the boy on the head, and, after inquiring whether he had won any alitores or commonies lately, both, of which I understand to be a particular species of marbles much prized by the youth of this town, made use of this remarkable expression, "How should you like to have another father?" I shall prove to you, gentlemen, that about a year ago, Pickwick suddenly began to absent himself from home, during long intervals, as if with the intention of gradually breaking off from my client. But I shall show you also, that his resolution was not at that time sufficiently strong, or that his better feelings conquered, if better feelings he has, or that the charms and accomplishments of my client prevailed against his unmanly intentions, by proving to you, that on one occasion, when he returned from the country, he distinctly and in terms, offered her marriage. Previously, however, taking special care, that there would be no witness to their solemn contract, and I am in a situation to prove to you, on the testimony of 3 of his own friends most unwilling witnesses, gentlemen most unwilling witnesses, that on that morning he was discovered by them holding the plaintiff in his arms, and soothing her agitation by his caresses and endearments. Apostrophe, a visible impression was produced upon the auditors by this part of the learned sergeant's address. Drawing forth 2 very small scraps of paper, he proceeded, "And now, gentlemen, but one word more. 2 letters have passed between these parties, letters which are admitted to be in the handwriting of the defendant, and which speak volumes, indeed. The letters, too, bespeak the character of the man. They are not open, fervent, eloquent epistles, breathing nothing but the language of affectionate attachment. They are covert, sly, underhanded communications, but, fortunately, far more conclusive, than if couched in the most glowing language and the most poetic imagery. Letters that must be viewed with a cautious and suspicious eye. Letters that were evidently intended at the time by Pickwick to mislead and delude any third parties into whose hands they might fall. Let me read the first. Garraway's, 12 o'clock. Dear Mrs. B. Chops and tomato sauce. Yours, Pickwick. Gentlemen, what does this mean? Chops and tomato sauce. Yours, Pickwick. Chops. Gracious heavens. And tomato sauce. Gentlemen, is the happiness of a sensitive and confiding female to be trifled away by such shallow artifices as these? The next has no date whatever, which is in itself suspicious. Dear Mrs. B., I shall not be at home till tomorrow. Slow coach. And then follows this very remarkable expression. Don't trouble yourself about the warming pan. The warming pan. Why, gentlemen, who does trouble himself about a warming pan? When was the peace of mind of man or woman broken or disturbed by a warming pan, which is in itself a harmless, a useful, and I will add, gentlemen, a comforting article of domestic furniture? Why is Mrs. Bartle so earnestly entreated not to agitate herself about this warming pan, unless, as is no doubt the case, it is a mere cover for hidden fire, a mere substitute for some endearing word or promise, agreeably to a preconcerted system of correspondence, artfully contrived by Pickwick with a view to his contemplated desertion, and which I am not in a condition to explain? And what does this allusion to the slow coach mean? For aught I know, it may be a reference to Pickwick himself, who has most unquestionably been a criminally slow coach during the whole of this transaction, but whose speed will now be very unexpectedly accelerated, and whose wheels, gentlemen, as he will find to his cost, will very soon be greased by you. ... Mr. Sergeant Buzfuzz paused in this place to see whether the jury smiled at his joke, but as nobody took it but the greengrocer, whose sensitiveness on the subject was very probably occasioned by his having subjected a chaise cart to the process in question on that identical morning, the learned sergeant considered it advisable to undergo a slight relapse into the dismals before he concluded. But enough of this. Gentlemen, ... said Mr. Sergeant Buzfuzz, it is difficult to smile with an aching heart. It is ill jesting when our deepest sympathies are awakened. My client's hopes and prospects are ruined, and it is no figure of speech to say that her occupation is gone indeed. The bill is down, but there is no tenant. Eligible single gentlemen pass and repass, but there is no invitation for to inquire within or without. All is gloom and silence in the house. Even the voice of the child is hushed. His infant sports are disregarded when his mother weeps. His alitores and his comedies are alike neglected. He forgets the long familiar cry of knuckle down and a tip cheese, or odd and even, his hand is out. But Pickwick, gentlemen, Pickwick, the ruthless destroyer of this domestic oasis in the desert of Goswell Street, Pickwick, who has choked up the well and thrown ashes on the sward, Pickwick, who comes before you today with his heartless tomato sauce and warming pans, Pickwick, still rears his head with unblushing effrontery and gazes without a sigh on the ruin he has made. Damages, gentlemen, heavy damages is the only punishment with which you can visit him, the only recompense you can award to my client. And for those damages she now appeals to an enlightened, a high-minded, a right-feeling, a conscientious, a dispassionate, a sympathizing, a contemplative jury of her civilized countrymen. ... With this beautiful peroration, Mr. Sergeant Buzfuzz sat down, and Mr. Justice Starley woke up. Call Elizabeth Club Pins, ... said Sergeant Buzfuzz, rising a minute afterwards, with renewed vigor. The nearest usher called for Elizabeth Tubpins. Another one, at a little distance off, demanded Elizabeth Jupkins, and a third rushed in a breathless state into King Street, and screamed for Elizabeth Muffins till he was hoarse. Meanwhile, Mrs. Clubpins, with the combined assistance of Mrs. Bartle, Mrs. Sanders, Mr. Dodson, and Mr. Fogg, was hoisted into the witness box. And when she was safely perched on the top step, Mrs. Bartle stood on the bottom one, with a pocket handkerchief and pattens in one hand, and a glass bottle that might hold about a quarter of a pint of smelling salts in the other, ready for any emergency. Mrs. Sanders, whose eyes were intently fixed on the judge's face, planted herself close by, with a large umbrella, keeping her right thumb pressed on the spring with an earnest countenance, as if she were fully prepared to put it up at a moment's notice. Apostrophe Mrs. Clubpins, apostrophe said Sergeant Buzzfuzz, pray compose yourself, ma'am. Apostrophe of course, directly Mrs. Clubpins was desired to compose herself, she sobbed with increased vehemence, and gave divers alarming manifestations of an approaching fainting fit, or, as she afterwards said, of her feelings being too many for her. Do you recollect, Mrs. Clubpins, apostrophe said Sergeant Buzzfuzz, after a few unimportant questions, do you recollect, being in Mrs. Bartle's back one pair of stairs, on one particular morning in July last, when she was dusting Pickwick's apartment? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, my lord and jury, I do, apostrophe replied Mrs. Clubpins. Apostrophe Mr. Pickwick's sitting room was the first floor front, I believe? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, it were, sir, apostrophe replied Mrs. Clubpins. What were you doing in the back room, ma'am? Apostrophe, apostrophe inquired the little judge. My lord and jury, apostrophe said Mrs. Clubpins, with interesting agitation, I will not deceive you. Apostrophe, you had better not, ma'am, apostrophe said the little judge. I was there, apostrophe resumed Mrs. Clubpins, unbeckoned to Mrs. Bartle, I had been out with a little basket, gentlemen, 2 by 3 pounds of red kidney perdities, which was 3 pound 2 pence halfpenny, when I see Mrs. Bartle's street door on the jar. Apostrophe, on the what? Apostrophe, apostrophe exclaimed the little judge. Partly open, my lord, apostrophe said Sergeant Snubbin. She said on the jar, apostrophe said the little judge, with a cunning look. It's all the same, my lord, apostrophe said Sergeant Snubbin. The little judge looked doubtful, and said he'd make a note of it. Mrs. Clubpins then resumed, I walked in, gentlemen, just to say good morning, and went, in a promiscuous manner, upstairs, and into the back room. Gentlemen, there was the sound of voices in the front room, and apostrophe, and you listened, I believe, Mrs. Clubpins? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Sergeant Buzzfuzz. Begging your pardon, sir, apostrophe replied Mrs. Clubpins, in a majestic manner, I would scorn the action. The voices was very loud, sir, and forced themselves upon my ear, apostrophe, well, Mrs. Clubpins, you were not listening, but you heard the voices. Was one of those voices Pickwick's? Apostrophe, yes, it were, sir. Apostrophe and Mrs. Clubpins, after distinctly stating that Mr. Pickwick addressed himself to Mrs. Bartle, repeated by slow degrees, and by dint of many questions, the conversation with which our readers are already acquainted. The jury looked suspicious, and Mr. Sergeant Buzzfuzz smiled as he sat down. They looked positively awful when Sergeant Snubbin intimated that he should not cross-examine the witness, for Mr. Pickwick wished it to be distinctly stated that it was due to her to say that her account was in substance correct. Mrs. Clubpins, having once broken the ice, thought it a favorable opportunity for entering into a short dissertation on her own domestic affairs, so she straightway proceeded to inform the court that she was the mother of 8 children at that present. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.